Welcome to the IP 360 podcast, brought to you by IP Private Wealth. This podcast talks about wealth, health, and all the different ways we measure our success. It's a true 360-degree look at how we manage our wealth. I'm joined today by the CEO of IP Private Wealth, Richard Kluska. With his decades of experience and as the founder of the IP 360 philosophy, Richard is the perfect person to walk us through today's topic. What is a family office and why do I need one? Let's go to the interview. We're on today with Richard Kluska, CEO of IP Private Wealth. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jordan.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about IP Private Wealth and what you do?
So IP Private Wealth is a boutique wealth management firm that specializes in high net worth individuals, primarily in the small to medium sized enterprises, as we've developed an expertise on areas of primary frustrations and solutions that business owners face on a regular basis through the evolution, sometimes revolution, of business cycles. So what we do is help business owners identify key frustrations, issues, objectives, and coordinate all of those activities with their professionals to realize a very efficient and effective methodology to deal with those goals.
And when you talk about this, you talk about all these different areas that need to be thought about all the time. Mm-hmm. Typically, when I talk to business owners, I hear that they've got, you know, they've got a meeting on Monday with their accountant downtown. They've got a meeting next Tuesday with a lawyer at a different office, et cetera, et cetera. And it can feel really fragmented. So the family office concept kind of answers that problem, right?
Correct. A family office is a very old concept, whether it was the Rothschild, whether it's the Bronfmans in Canada. But the family office, in essence, what it states is that earlier in your career, you realize that it's important to have good experts and advisors in their specific areas: tax, accounting, legal, finance, investing, insurance, banking, etc. But as the business matures and as time goes on, what they realize is not just important to have good advisors and good technical expertise, it's really important to have these people coordinated and working on the client's agenda. So the medical term that I use in this situation to try to explain this is called contraindications. I mean, people know this from a medical perspective where they say drug A is really good and drug B is really good, but in combination, based on your own biology, your own specific biology, the combination of those two drugs can actually be lethal. And that's what pharmacology is all about, and that's what medical treatments are all about. Well, it's the same thing in finance. It's very common, as you just expressed, is that client first goes to the accountant, gets some discussion, goes then to the lawyer, gets a discussion, goes to the banker, goes to the insurance person, goes to all their people, and they start getting really confused. Colloquially, I call it the professional Bermuda Triangle. It's a vortex that just sucks people in, and also sucks in a lot of time, money, resources, and frustrations. So we have to pierce that. We have to pierce that through a proper discovery process and a methodology to create an agenda that allows all advisors to focus in. Because advisors, these specific experts, they are really very good. They're well-meaning and they're excellent. But the question is, are you asking the right question? Because if you will get back a very precise, educated answer to the question asked, but it may be the wrong question. So, or even how the question is framed. And oftentimes when we complete these agendas and these processes, all the advisors, suddenly you can see the light bulb go on in the boardroom and go, wow, wow, that's really good. Let's now move forward. So the process allows for a great deal of efficiencies and effectiveness, because timing is critical.
And so, so in a family office situation, or with IP Private Wealth's family office situation specifically, you know, you've got an accounting expert, you've got a taxation expert, et cetera, et cetera. Does that mean that the business owner no longer needs any their existing lawyer or existing accountant?
No. As a matter of fact, we complement it. All we're doing is complementing it. One thing that we respect is the fact that business owners start with a business and have developed relationships with professionals. And these people have a history, and that history cannot be ignored. I mean, it's important to, if you're just looking at a set of financial statements, you know, a professional can come to a conclusion that may not necessarily be accurate. It was done for some nuanced requirements that may not necessarily be reflected in the documentation that's provided. So oftentimes, the consults that we have, the professionals that we use as well, are more than comfortable to work as consult on file to supplement. So we are not here to replace any one advisor, because those advisors are good. It's just, again, it's about the coordination of the advisors to focus the discussion on agendas. So we've developed enough expertise to know what question to ask. And a process we call is called the IP360, right? Let's take the look from a 360-degree angle, because as I explained to you earlier, I used to be a pilot, and we used to have to do our marking of our navigation, and we would have these variances that we could not. When you're flying a small Cessna, it's called winds aloft. Winds flow you all over the place, and if you start deviating from your hash marks, the reason why it's important is you'll run out of gas. Mm-hmm. So the issue is, we're trying to keep the conversation focused rather than deviating from the flight path. And because the world is winds aloft, there's a wind pulling a business owner somewhere, a client, a banker, a creditor, a tax issue, a legal issue, a family issue. So these are the equivalent wind alofts of a business owner. And we need to keep that flight path kept in order. That's the key issue. That's the efficiency of the model.
When a business owner finally finds you, yeah, are they usually at a point of like facing a large challenge or a crisis? What kind of helps them, or when do they finally end up at the doorstep of a family office usually?
Unfortunately, well, normally a family office, so let's call this a family office, traditionally is someone who has $100 million or more. So right, not many Ontario businesses have that, but business owners have the need for a family office concept. So hopefully we get called in. So we're a referral business. We get called in a lot by other accountants, lawyers, and other clients to talk to people. So hopefully we get there in time, because yes, we oftentimes get called into a crisis situation to try to resolve an issue. And on strategic planning, you need time. You need some time and discipline to be able to get the effect that we want. Dealing in a crisis environment, like we deal with a lot of risk management issues. And when I say risk management, I'm talking about business risk management, investment risk management. And I was at a great conference on risk management that actually some of the best risk managers are battle generals, battlefield generals. And in discussion with some of these people, they said, listen, the last thing you do is develop a battle plan in the middle of a battle. You develop your battle plan before the battle. And if they flank left, you do this. If you flank right, you do that. If you go heads on, you do this. So these battle plans, yes, there's nuances as the battle goes on, but at least you have an established plan of action as to how to deal with the quote unquote threat or the opportunity of taking the hill, right? That's what business is all about. It's about risk managing so that you're not wasting precious resources on activities that are not getting you the focused results. So back to your question, hopefully we don't get involved in a critical issue. We try to get in a proactive issue and coordinate all of the advisors. The last thing you want to do is be around a boardroom and some, the business owner normally goes, I just sold the business. I just got an offer. I'm selling the business. Round the table goes. And one of the advisors says, I wish I would have known that, but we could have saved you a bucket load of tax.
Right.
Not a good conversation to be in that time. Right.
No.
So an ounce of prevention, all those colloquial terms that we've learned since childhood really apply, because the small, medium-sized enterprise does not have one thing a public company has: a board of directors. So we don't need the regulatory requirement of a board of directors, but it would be very efficient to have a board of advisors, the same people you're used to dealing with the agenda on a proactive versus reactive basis. And those clients that embrace that, my recollection or my history of this, the more people embrace that concept, the more successful they are, and the more they can monetize the value and achieve family successes than just dealing with one issue after another on a reactive basis.
See, that's really interesting. But, you know, in my experience, and tell me if I'm wrong, I feel like people are good at something, and that's why they go into business. Right. You know, I'm a great mechanic, I'm a great realtor, I'm a great marketer, whatever the thing is. And then there's so many other aspects to business owning aside from being good at the actual trade.
Correct.
Yeah. How it seems like there's it's a gap in our education or our way of gaining knowledge that there's no one really walking around teaching business owners how to be good at business.
You know, that's correct. And as a matter of fact, there's I can't recall, probably 20 or more years ago now, there's been an excellent book called The E-Myth, The Entrepreneurial Myth, where the observance of this consultant, this business consultant, was that most business owners would be better off as an employee of their own firm because of the, like you say, lack of expertise, lack of direction, lack of proactive professional advice to get the business situation going. And again, it's not to follow the business owners. All businesses that I know start with a core expertise. And then what they do is they hire towards experts or they hire good advisors, and they get quarterbacks like ourselves to help facilitate those issues. It's not easy. It's actually a difficult thing to do because there's two aspects that business owners understand. They know they need good advice, but they also like control. They like controlling their future. That's why they're in business. They're in business because they want to be in control of their environment. And it's that push and pull between control and delegation, which is usually, the lack of delegation is usually about poor reporting. The business owner is not comfortable with the reporting or the information that's coming to allow them to enact good decisions. That's what this is about. So quite frankly, this is all about the board of directors protocols, how to go about, get advice, have a strategic direction, and then enact on those directions properly. So that's a classic. By the way, what you're describing is a classic situation. It's no one's fault. It's just the way it goes. We start off with sweat equity. We don't start off with I'm going to start a plumbing business and I'm going to capitalize the business with $1 million and hire all the infrastructure and all the professionals to do that. We don't have that. I started that way. I started my business. We don't have that privilege. We start with a concept, a thought, a motivation. The reason why businesses are successful is because of their passion. Because when you do the analysis in the beginning, you should never get into business, you're going to fail. But the passion, just the sheer drive, makes that happen. And then you hit your points of success. And that's where you need to start getting professional people involved to help you accelerate your continued growth. Otherwise, it stagnates. Otherwise, it hits a wall. So that's where it's all about. Very close to my heart because I'm a business owner and I work with business owners and I've made these mistakes myself. And luckily I surrounded myself with good people and I'm just sharing people where it is. And the reason why I'm having this podcast, it's because these mistakes are common. They happen all the time. They don't even know they're being made. And then it becomes potentially contraindications lethal. And we're trying to have a podcast to tell people there are solutions, whether it's with us or firms like ours. These solutions are available today. It just takes a methodology to do it. And you do not have to sweep out all your advisors and change it. You do not have to do that. You just have to have a process to do that.
So I'm sure you've seen all different kinds of mistakes made by business owners, but you're talking about this contraindication concept. Can you give me like an actual example of a time where you've seen that, or give me something I can visualize, an example of a time when a business owner kind of did one of those contraindication situations and ended up in a bad spot?
So there's a lot, and I'm trying to think of which one that is kind of unusual and a very easy problem to fall prey to. So I'm going to choose one that most people think of tax or profitability, whatever. I'm going to go with creditor issues. So creditor protection, and it's kind of unusual, but it's really a misunderstood or oftentimes forgotten one, an easy one. And what I mean by that is that when you talk to professional groups, they actually call a business a vulnerable asset. So think about it. I'm putting my blood, sweat, tears, my personal income, my personal time, everything I put into this business. And everybody I service hire, report to, whether it's the bank, CRA, whoever the case may be, everybody has access to my capital before I do. Mm-hmm. Everybody has access to your capital before you do. So CRA can take the money, they can charge you an audit, employees can sue you, contractors can sue you, landlords can sue you. It goes on and on and on. So what happens again, because we are not using OPM oftentimes, other people's money, this is our capital, right?
Right.
So businesses say, oh, listen, Jordan, you made $1 million profit and you're going to pay tax on that profit at 26%. Well, let's just use a general rate. And you got $740,000 of profit, but you can't take it. You got to put it back into business because all of your profit is in receivables, land, equipment, whatever the case may be. So you put the $750,000 back into your business. Something goes wrong. It's gone. It's gone. So the business, or the contraindication is the business needs capital. You're putting in your own capital. The bank won't lend you money unless you put capital involved. And yet everybody has access to it. So there's strategies with the use of corporate structuring and the same GSAs, general security agreements that the banks put on, that you can put in a whole arrangement, a series of transactions, very simple, very effective, where you can creditor protect yourself. The CRA and the banks are always going to be online, but you can creditor protect yourself against everybody else. So that way, at least when things are good, you got to put money back into business. When things are bad, everybody has access to it. Who signs up for this? The business owner.
Right.
Right. And that's just a contraindication of the fact that a simple requirement, listen, you got to put the business back. You got to put the cash back in. Good. I've just exposed my profits, my retained earnings are my profits. I've just exposed my profits to everybody out there. Mm-hmm. Don't have to. So that's just a simple one, but a very unfortunate one. And I've even seen it where the transaction allows that to happen, and then the mechanics or how it's done doesn't get followed up, and the assets are still exposed. I see this all the time. So that's a very weird one, but to me it's important, because in the event of a catastrophic issue, I mean, how many people would sign up to say, if I had a lot of success and my business is not worth $10 million, it's all in the business, and something went wrong because someone sued me for an accident that I didn't see and the insurance company somehow didn't want to pay it. How would you like it to tell your wife or your spouse, or your husband, that suddenly, oh, we have nothing. Someone took it. That's catastrophic to me.
Well, sure. And this year, particularly, I think a lot more business owners have had to put money back into their business, even when they may not typically do that, right? And it would have been a lot of sort of urgent decision-making, so not necessarily carefully thought out.
No, exactly. We go back to the concept of scarcity, time and money. Those are the two things we're managing. And the business is going to suck both of them off us. They want all the business owners' time. They want all the business owners' money. So the issue is, and the sad part about what we see always is, when things are really good, everybody wants the fair share. No disrespect to any of the stakeholders, but the employees want their fair share. The landlords want their, especially landlords on retail, right? Oh, we get a percentage of your revenues if you own a restaurant, as an example. Just everybody has, they're at the trough when things are going well, including our tax authorities. And when things go bad, it's all on the one person. It's amazing how business owners still have a sense of humor.
Yes. So, and you've talked about this with me before, this concept of the business is always hungry. It's always going to take what you give it, right?
Always, always. Let's be candid. If you follow business protocol, you got into business to get out of business. So my observation is, I was in business and doing this consulting for the high tech businesses in the 1990s. So the bad news is they really didn't have a good business plan. You know, they were just doing things because money was cheap. Venture capital was throwing money in like there was no tomorrow. And valuations were how many eyeballs in the business, how many PhDs in the business, how many engineers in the business. And they had these really absurd valuations. But the concept was bright, because whenever they went for money, they always said, I need your $10 million. And in 5 years, based on the number of eyeballs, we're going to get out $50 million. And we're going to get out in 2 years. So maybe very extreme example, but the concept is correct. You're in business to get out of business. business owners, because they created it with their blood, sweat, and their own money, their own time, their own thought, their own love, their own desire. They got into business and they don't know how to get out of business. They have no business plan to get out, or as we call in our terms, how to monetize. How do we convert the business value to your personal income and net worth after tax, creditor protected? How do we do that? So that whole process of the basic principles of getting into business to get out of the business or extract value out of the business gets lost in day-to-day requirements. What I'm trying to say with that is when I do my public speaking on succession, the analogy or the what I want people to picture is the worst selfish teenager you ever saw or raised in your life, right? No matter what you give a young teenager, some of them, no matter what you give, they need more, they want more. They want more of your time, they want more of your money. Well, a business is that teenager image on steroids. It will suck out of you everything you have because the business is lazy. It wants your time and your money to make that activity easier versus the business working for you to generate income, value, time for you. That simple tenet is really important. And I won't mention names, but I had a very successful business owner in Ottawa. Everybody knows of this person. And he would say, Richard, you know what I love about you the most? You are my greed gland. You're sitting in the back of my throat, always telling me my greed gland. What is it for you? If you're going to put $1 million in the business, if you gave me $1 million to invest in stocks, I'm sure you wouldn't be happy if you said, I lost it. I need more. There's no distribution, no income, no dividends, no nothing. That's the challenge. And the biggest problem with business owners is in a public company, you have a board of directors, officers, right? The shareholders, board of directors, and officers. In a small business, they're all the same person. They get lost. And where they get lost is the business demands their time and money.
Okay, so if we're going into business with the right mindset, we are thinking ahead about exit strategy. And there's nothing bad about that. That's not shameful. That doesn't mean that you don't care about your employees or anything else like that. This is your life, your livelihood, your future, your retirement, what your next project, whatever it is, right? So is there ever a wrong time or too early of a time to be planning ahead for what your monetization or exit strategy would be?
So there's two points, Jordan, on the first comment that a monetization or exit strategy is a selfish thought process. It's not. Actually, a monetization strategy structured properly respects and rewards all the stakeholders in the company. Employees, lenders, bankers, etc. So think of it, a successful business will always do the same thing. It'll pay all its bills. It'll pay all its taxes. It'll pay the employees. It'll give them raises. It'll give them bonuses. All I'm trying to say is the two stakeholders that oftentimes get lost is A, the business owner, and B, the spouse and family. Those are the two stakeholders that oftentimes get unrewarded for the activities. All I'm trying to say is don't put your interests ahead of everybody else, but for God's sakes, please put your interests at least aligned with everybody else, because no business can survive in an island. Every business needs good employees, good suppliers, good people, good bankers, good advisors. And the only way to do that is to be successful, respectful, but please put yourself first. So the issue today on timing is getting tight because in Canada, the majority of business owners are baby boomers, successful ones. And we are a cohort that range from, I think it's 55 to 70 years old approximately, with the mean right now hitting about 64. So if you think about it, you have this massive demographic curve, all business owners, a lot of business owners in this big baby boom curve, all heading towards exit at the same time. Okay, now you have a supply and demand issue. When you suddenly have an abundance of businesses to want to sell, and based on pure demographics, a shortage of people who want to take it over. How, from a real estate perspective, how are you going to make your business have curb appeal so that you're competing effectively with every other piece of residence on your street that's up for sale the same time you are. And God, let's not make it price. Please, let's not make it price. Let's make it value, right? So we all understand the analogies in other areas. We know it. Like I used flight path. I used contraindications. I used, you know, real estate curb appeal. These concepts need to be understood, adopted, and embraced by the business owner so that they, as a stakeholder of that business, are at least getting compensated commensurate for the amount of risk that that stakeholder is putting into the business. Risk, the concept that unfortunately some tax authorities don't understand. Some of the recent tax issues do not understand the concept of risk and make statements like, and a business owner should be compensated the same way as the employee. That makes no sense. I understand the need for proper taxation and all that. I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to go on any soapbox as to what taxation should be. But when the tax authorities say that the business owner should be taxed in the same method as the employee, ignores the concept of risk. And that's where I think business owners get a little upset and they're becoming increasingly angry because they're going, I'm putting the risk in, I'm taking the risk, I'm putting my capital at worth, but I'm not allowed making money, evidently. So that's the frustration. So the business timing is now. If you're in that baby boomer cohort, you have to monetize your business in a methodology to be respectful to your stakeholders and to deal with this. And one of very difficult business that has these issues is a family business. Second or third generations in the business, this is especially challenging and needs some very clear thinking as to how to go about this. But again, exit strategy is not a selfish event. It's actually a very proper event that rewards all stakeholders commensurate with the risk that's being taken on. That's where it comes down to.
Yeah, and I mean, to bring it back to IP Private Wealth, it sounds like this is a prime situation where some proactive, as much as we can be proactive right now, support from a family office would be, this would be a wise time.
We need every good advisor to be working on the file on a coordinated basis and not doing siloed solutions. Siloed solutions leads to other problems. We need a coordinated approach and one based on the individual philosophy and understanding what their requirements are and their timetables. All of these issues, I mentioned the word discovery. The discovery of your needs and situation is paramount. And nobody spends time on that blue sky thinking. Everybody's dealing with tactics. Nobody's spending the time to back up, take a breath, take a look at the blue sky. Where do we want to go? How do we want to go? Why do we want to go? What's our timeline? Wave the wand. Wave the magic wand. Where do you want to be 5 years from now? Nobody asks the business owner that question. Where do you want to be 5 years from now? When you can't sleep at night, what is it that keeps you up that you go, oh my God, I hope this happens. Oh my God, I hope this never happens. What are those drivers? Your advisors probably don't know. So we need to uncover those drivers. And sometimes business owners don't even know because they're so busy in their business, they don't even have time to reflect on this. But those are the key issues. And this is my history of doing it. And I have witnessed highly successful businesses and not so successful businesses from different industries, from different sizes, from different profitabilities. And the successful ones all have those key elements in common. They're all in common. It's the methodology of business focus on shareholder value and stakeholder value, which includes all components of the business.
Richard, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been wonderful. Really looking forward to doing another episode with you soon. Let us know, where can people reach out to IP Private Wealth?
So the best place is to go to our website, www.ipprivatewealth.com. We're on the web. Our phone number is 613-274-2662 is the general number. And myself or some of our great team members in the office are more than pleased to sit down with anyone to have that coffee. If you look at our website, it starts with a coffee, a discovery coffee. Where are we going? What are your issues? Can we help? and see what the journey takes us. So thank you, Jordan.
Amazing. Thanks so much. And looking forward to the next one.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the IP360 podcast. I hope you learned something new. I know I always do. If you'd like to reach out to us here, you can email us at comms@ipprivatewealth.com or head to ipprivatewealth.com for more info on the IP360 philosophy to wealth management. See you next time.